It is Apice Pacific. Okay, I screwed that up. It's Anime Pacific episode 111.
Triple one. Very exciting.
That's right. Triple one, and it's triple one in 2011. So.
All right.
That's just amazing. Yeah, it's a good way
yes,
to start.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So now it is my Easter holidays. So me and Alex have a bit more time on our hands. And we were just recently playing Magicka, which, you know, the game on Steam where you're these little wizards and you cast spells on people, which is really fun. But more importantly, it's where Alex muttered the immortal lines. Wait, I'm going to blow this guy off, eh?
I never said that. I deny everything.
Well, I didn't explain the context in which he said it, but the point is he said it and it was... Rather.
Yeah, as soon as I started saying it, I was like, "Ah, wait a minute." That was almost as bad as your I love shooting these guys with a goo comment from Unreal Tournament. that's still the ultimate classic, but yeah.
Walking on eggshells whenever we play games. That's all we do.
That's right. Yeah, but that magic is a blast. I think we talked about it before, but it's like the graphics are very basic, but that spell system, it's very clever. It reminds me, because I'm getting sucked back into the Wheel of Time series, and it reminds me a lot of the sort of the Wheel of Time magic system where they've got. The different, you know, elements, you know, earth, wind, fire, etc., and they weave them in the book series. They weave the different elements together to make these spells. Basically, sure, doing the same thing in Magicka. You've got, basically eight different elements, sort of, and you have to sort of mix them together in order to make your spells. And there's so many different combinations that it's pretty incredible. It's such a brilliant. It's one of those systems that it's easy to understand, but it's difficult to master because there's just so many different combinations. It's a lot of fun. Big thumbs up to that Magicka. And although maybe it defeats the purpose of a budget game, I'd like to see, down the road, Magicka 2 with triple A production values.
I don't see that as being too difficult a task, especially since it sold like 3 million units just on the PC alone. Which
yeah, I agree.
Is
but I wonder
that a lot of console games would be developers would be jealous of.
Yeah, but $10 a pop. I mean.
Right. Well.
But yeah. But and the other thing is they can sell for $10, and maybe it sold that many because you know the people with the geriatric computers, Manga Man, you know, can buy this game off Steam and be able to play it. You know, they're not worrying about like it looks like something that was, you know, that came out in 1999. You know, it's pretty
not that bad, but yes, I mean it's certainly dated.
I totally buy the like back of the box. I could imagine a box retail box saying, you know. Now with VGA graphics, you know, something like that.
But need 3D FX card to play. That's
Voodoo 2. Yeah.
Well, also, speaking of the Wheel of Time, did you ever play the Wheel of Time first-person shooter that came out like in 1999?
You know what? I might have, actually.
That just
maybe
came
I'm,
up
maybe,
on a
maybe
list.
I'm thinking of Hexen.
No, well, it was an honest-to-goodness Wheel of Time game, and... It's one of those games that constantly comes up on, you know, the top 10 underrated games of all time. 1999, that's right. Unreal Engine 1, so probably look a bit dated now unless there's some sort of high texture pack or something. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my friend had that and I saw him play it. It looked pretty good. So, I mean, that was in 1999.
Yeah, well, you know, and boy, yeah, you wonder why there hasn't been more stuff for that universe. Like, it's such a rich and popular book series that you'd think there'd be more people that are latching onto it in order to crank stuff up for it. Of course, the fact that he died, you know, before finishing the last book kind of sucks, but...
Yeah, well, you know, Dune, same thing, same story.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, Dune, you know, at least that wasn't like... It felt sort of complete, did it not?
Actually, that's what I thought, but upon rereading it, it is kind of a cliffhanger.
Oh. But I don't know. But at least at the time, like Jordan, he knew he had like a fatal illness, so he sort of planned for his death. So I guess you know he was working on the book 12 or whatever, and he, I don't know, sort of, I guess he relayed what the ending was going to be to somebody in some fashion, and then when he died, somebody else could pick up where he left off. So anyway, so the final book is coming out in that series. It's coming out in this fall. I've been listening to the audiobook series, which I mentioned a couple shows ago, I think.
So you don't have to look at damn fancy words.
Well, I have book 4 and I have book 8 I purchased in my library. So I read that when I wasn't holding, you know. Basically, it's just so easy to have this.
Oh, I know.
That, like, it's just, you know, especially when you're taking care of Mika and you're, you know, it's just, you pop that mirror and it's just easier than walking around holding a book and holding a baby at the same time, to be honest.
Well, I think also, I listened to kind of an autobiographical book, and it was actually narrated by the person who it's about, you know, being an autobiography. And right. I think it's actually better to hear them sort of to talk about it, to read it.
Yeah, sure. And in this case, like, again, like a lot of, I think I mentioned this before, but like a lot of it depends on the person who's reading the book. And in this case, the Wheel of Time series, they've got a guy and a girl. A male actor, I guess, he's reading all the chapters from that are from the male point of view, and the woman is reading the chapters from the female point of view, and then they do the voices, and they're actors, basically. It's like listening to a radio play. It's really well done. Of course, it's a lot slower than as if you read it yourself. I mean, since I have book 4, I you know, when I wasn't holding baby, I was reading it because it's just faster, and I was so excited. I want to keep going as fast as possible to hear what happens next. So I'm really keyed up. But now I'm on to book 5. I don't have that. Well, let's just be honest. One can find those audiobooks in the internet someplace. So it's easier than going down to the library.
Well, I was just saying my Galaxy Tab has a really, really good e-book reader function. Like, you put your finger on the screen and it actually turns the page, or you can actually, like, it just feels like a real page, and the font is really clear and sharp, so you don't sort of have strained eyes that you would normally have when looking at an LCD screen for a long time. It's got like an auto dimming feature, so if you're somewhere where it's where you've got enough sort of natural light, it'll actually dim the screen more, and then it you know, won't be a big strain on the eyes. And I finished the last Dune book that way, and you know, I really, you know, I think it's really good.
Well, I gotta say, like, I do remember thinking that, you know, in the 80s and 90s, oh, people who, you know, buy audiobooks on cassettes, you know, they're a bunch of doofuses. Why would anybody want to do that? But now I'm totally into it. I'm going to, I highly recommend this Wheel, the reader for the Wheel of Time series, available out there somewhere. Demonoid. big thumbs up. Very good. And I look forward to the final book in this series. And apparently the person who did the Game of Thrones books, I haven't listened to them. I you know, I read them, but apparently I've heard great things about the guy who did the Game of Thrones series. When it was announced he was going to be the reader for the book that's coming out this summer, The reaction on the internet was like a big thumbs up. They're pretty excited about that because apparently he's a British actor who really nailed the first first four books. So look, I might instead of rereading them, I might just do them in audiobook form.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to listen to Shakespeare if it's read out by, you know, Larry the Cable Guy or something.
That's right, eh?
Romeo, but, Romeo, get her done! Oh,
oh. Yeah.
I can't even believe I know his catchphrase.
Get her done. Well, but speaking of Game of Thrones, obviously...
fantasy in general.
I don't know. Yeah, well, I don't know when you're going to finally release this episode, but by our lights, the first episode of Game of Thrones, the TV series, aired on Sunday.
That's right. It aired at the same time all around the world. So why?
Yeah.
Download. Well, come on, it's HBO. But what can
support
I do?
HBO. Yes, yes. Big thumbs up, HBO. I love HBO. My father subscribes. So in a way, I went down, which is true. So perhaps I went down to visit my parents, and I watched it at their house, and I drove home. It's completely possible.
We both watched. We've both seen it.
Well, I'm from a point of view of a person who read the books, and you haven't read the books. So I'm curious. I want your gut reaction, go ahead.
Well, okay. Production value wise, it looks fantastic. Locations are good. Castles look really real. I kind of like the opening, how it's like all these little toy castles coming to life.
It has the map of the world in an anime.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a good way of letting you know sort of the world without sort of being exposition heavy, which is
also like orienting you.
But at the same time, I kind of feel like I've watched a 1 hour trailer for what is to come. So, and I'm sort of, I still don't know who everyone is. Who's this? Who's that? Who's that? What? Him? Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the big problem.
And Connie was watching it with me, and, I don't know. She seems to think all white people look the same. So that really confused her.
I'm totally into that. Going into that, if somebody read the books, it almost feels like you need to have that. It really helps to have that background, you know, because you already know, okay, Sean B, that's Ned Stark. You already know all these characters. You know what's going to happen reading the books. So it's almost like, yeah, it's so hard to do. To take that book and put it on the screen. Then they're pretty faithful to the book, as far as I remember. They made the wife, the only difference is there might be the trivial things, they made the wife, you know, in the TV series, she's sort of saying, Ned, don't go down to the south to be the hand of the king, you know, yada yada, don't go, very foreboding. But in the books, she's sort of pushing him to go, and he doesn't want to go. It's kind of reversed.
I can tell you, you don't want to spoil something, so I won't. Yeah. I won't push it. But you know, also at the end of the episode, there are two people humping, and I kind of thought that guy was actually the brother of that.
It
guy.
Is.
Oh, okay. Well, that's highly disturbing.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the other thing. I'm wondering if people caught that. Like the guy, like it's the brother and sister, the twins, who are fucking at the end of that show. And at
quite
the end
graphically,
of
episode, I might add.
Yeah, well, I don't know graphically. They're it's kind of doggy style, and the woman, what's her name? She was Gorgo in 300.
Yeah. I thought that was her. Forget her name. And she was in that Red Baron film also that I kept bitching about.
Anyway, she's a fairly big name anyway, so she's. Well, but see, there's a lot of stuff after seeing that, and this, we're getting into spoil. Like, I don't know, is it considered a spoiler because it's already aired. It's episode one, so it doesn't really matter. But so you can follow this through. So she's the wife of the king, and she's having a sort of affair, quote unquote, with her brother, and it's obvious that she does not like the king. So, like, you should be able to think about now they have a son, Joffrey, Prince Joffrey.
Bit of a sleaze, isn't he?
Yeah, but now it's a leap of logic. So she doesn't like her husband. She and her twin brother are fucking, like, insane. Yeah. Now, what's the logic there? Joffrey, yeah. Is Joffrey the son of the king, or is it the son of Jaime, her brother? You see, so there's a whole bunch of leaps of logic that people have to make from that, like, 10-second clip of, you know, these two people screwing. I wonder. I don't know if they sort of have that sort of exposition in. If they'll sort of make that more obvious in the second episode, if they're just going to leave it like that, because I don't know how many people noticed it, or let alone for, like, you didn't notice it was the twins having sex, like.
It was only because of their hair color that I guess that they were. But, well, I think it was sort of somewhat alluded to. But also, it seems, I don't know, internet movie, don't look at the internet movie database page, because it says this actor is in it for 9 episodes, this actor is in it for 5 episodes, so that makes me think, oh, do they die? So.
Don't look at that.
Yeah, I shouldn't look at that. I should not look at that.
But it doesn't necessarily mean anything, because, like, there are so many. In the book, there are, like, so many different points of view. Like, when you get up to, like book 3, there are something like 17 different, like, you know, different points of view, characters, that I guess it gets so complicated. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it might be 5 episodes spread out over a season.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it might be 9 episodes spread out. Like, so it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get offed.
That's good. Otherwise, it would have.
And there are only 10 episodes in the season anyway. So, you know, they might. I hope this show, they should at least show more of the wall. They might have a whole episode set up there for all I know. So that might, you know, like, it's obvious that Jon Snow is going to go up there, right? The bastard son is going to go up to the wall. He wants to become a Night's Watchman. So, or Black Watch. I forget.
Yeah, you know, they depicted, like, the bastard guy as really sympathetic, but all the other brothers seem to be, like, you know, arrogant pricks.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. At least you didn't really get to notice them all. They sort of just blend together. But there's the older brother Rob. He's a bit of a sort of a hero character in the book. He's a good guy. But it's hard to, like, there was in there briefly in that first episode. Like, I don't know if you got the sense of it. Like, the older sister Sansa, she's, like, a bit of a stuck up. You know, she's drooling over the Prince Joffrey. You know, she's a bit of a highfalutin, I don't know, bitch, but she's a, you know, she's a, like, a lady and wants to be.
Yeah.
And then the younger sister's the, you know, the tomboy. They set that up all nicely. The first episode, it's all set up. So, and because it's HBO, they don't care about ratings. They're not selling for advertisers. So there's no, it's not like a TV show, like on NBC or something, where they have to grab people in episode 1 and 2. And then if they don't get a certain rating, they'll drop the series. They've already got the subscribers and they've signed up, so there's no worry about that. So yeah. You know, it's already renewed for a second season, actually, as of this airing.
Yes, certain, yeah, I heard that. That'll be good.
That's awesome. Now, the other big show that came out was a couple, but you saw Camelot.
Yeah, I saw Camelot the other day, last night. And
so this is a stars show.
Yep.
It came out at the beginning of this month. Now, this was they rushed this into production after HBO announced they were doing Game of Thrones. Stars rushed this Camelot into production and threw it out on the air a couple weeks before Game of Thrones in order to sort of leech on to some of the publicity.
Yeah, it also followed Spartacus: Gods of the Arena, which was the second series of Spartacus, which, as everybody probably knows, Spartacus is one of my favorite TV shows ever, and I had high hopes for Camelot, and I've only seen the first episode, and I will continue to watch it. I think they say it's only planned for one season of 10 episodes, but who knows. But, you know, there were quite a few disappointing elements, which is a shame, because they got a lot of really good European actors that a lot of people, you know, like Americans might not know who they are, but I certainly did, such as James Purefoy, who was in the Solomon Kane film. Did you see Solomon Kane?
Is that a show from the 80s?
No, it just came out last year.
Who am I thinking of? What's that 80s movie? King Solomon's Mines, maybe.
Solomon Kane is done by Robert E. Howard, you know, who made Conan the Barbarian. And Solomon Kane was this really awesome sort of, you know, hard R-rated fantasy action film. It's basically set in the Puritan times, except that all the things that Puritans, you know, were afraid of, like witches and vampires and wizardry and whatnot, really sort of exists. So it takes it from a serious point of view, and it was a very good action film. But James Purefoy is been in sort of lots of sort of period piece, mostly European period piece things, and he's a very good actor. Eva Green plays Morgan Le Fay, and she was in Kingdom of Heaven. She played the sort of the love interest in that. So they've got a lot of people with sort of, I suppose you could say, medieval or fantasy cred. But Joseph Fiennes, you know, who was Ralph Fiennes' brother, he was in Shakespeare in Love, which I actually quite enjoyed. Yes, I know you say I have no penis, but I did enjoy Shakespeare in Love.
No, that was a good movie. I agree. It didn't deserve to win Best Picture that year, but it was a good movie.
It was a good sort of, yeah, it's a movie you can sort of watch and enjoy every time, but it's not necessarily the best film of all time.
I don't know if I go that far. I mean, it was good to watch once, and that was good enough, and then, you know, move on. Okay. I mean, otherwise you can just, you know, go wash out your pussy right now, Dane. But
well, Joseph Fiennes, you know, he was also in Elizabeth, and he's been in all sorts of Merchant of Venice, that's right, which was a pretty good adaptation. But he plays Merlin, and I kind of had problems with that because I like my Merlin to be sort of bearded, long hair, oak staff, very mysterious. But he's kind of got this sort of shaved head, and he just doesn't look like a Merlin to me. And the guy that plays King Arthur is, and this is going to sound gay, but he's very cute, I suppose you could say.
You're gay.
Yeah, well, gay. I mean, he's sort of, you know, he plays it like a wide-eyed, naive boy. And I don't know how that'll change, but, you know, he was okay. I think my main problem with it was that you know, it's a Starz show, and again, it's a cable show. And as you know, Spartacus had the most extreme content imaginable. And this has, you know, some nudity and sex in it. A little bit of violence, but it didn't seem too graphic. But the sex scene, you know, all well and good. But at the same time, yeah, there's a little bit of swearing too. But it seemed like it was written to be kind of a universal action hour show. So it's almost written to be a PG-13 or a PG show, but with R content in it. So
yeah.
At the same time, the knights that, like, you start to see some of the knights who are, and this is quite a different take on the Arthurian tale. And I love the Arthurian tale, and I love all the adaptations of it. But at the same time, like, you know, I was saying how I really love the King Arthur, the role-playing game. And that was one of my favorite versions of the Arthurian tale.
You mean for the computer you're talking about?
Yeah, for the PC. Whereas this one, yeah, I just don't know. But I saw one of the knights, and one of the knights looks like he's, you know, a black guy.
He's got a... What do you mean he's a black guy?
Well,
literally a black guy.
Yeah, literally a black guy. And
What do you mean? Like, yeah, there is or isn't. What do you mean? Seems to be.
Well, so okay.
Is he like going? Are his pantaloons around his knees? And I don't know. Sure. Like what?
No, I just because he was sort of in the background, and I'm just looking at the cast list, and I don't like. It's similar to you know. Our problem with sort of retroactively putting power chicks in period pieces when it's not real. I mean, I seriously doubt there was a black knight of the round table. And
yeah, you're right. It's moronic. It really is stupid.
One of the actresses, like, in the Internet Movie Database list is called Chipo Chung. And Chipo Chong is a Tanzanian-born Zimbabwean actress, raised in Zimbabwe. Of course, naturally, as you can guess from her last name, she's half Chinese. So I highly doubt a half Chinese, half Zimbabwean, or half Zulu would have been on the round table.
Yeah, so, it is. That's so fucking retarded. Like, It's like that. It's the worst PC bullshit. It sucks you right out of it, you know. And like, yeah, it's one thing. Like you can sort of pull that off in like a fantasy, because it's like, it's a made up place. But it, and Camelot is sort of the same thing. But it's based, you know, it's supposed to be medieval England. you know, like I don't know. Yeah, that is bullshit.
Well, sort of. Yeah.
It's almost like a parody of, like, didn't who was that guy? There was a comedy made a few years back about a black guy who goes to the Knights of the Round Table days.
Martin Lawrence, Black Knight.
Yeah, Black Knight. Right. Martin Lawrence. That's it. You know, it's almost like that. It's like a comedy.
Yeah.
You know, like
Martin Lawrence annoys the living shit out of me, so I haven't seen Black Knight, but. I just think this whole sort of political correctness.
I suppose the Black Knight is like this massive cod piece.
That's right. they don't have the Green Knight anymore. They have the Black Knight.
Yeah.
I'm gonna kill the fool. Yes.
That's like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. But no, that's actually Mr. T.
Mr. T.
So, I mean, you know, you're right. From a historical perspective, it sucks you right out. And obviously, you know, Spartacus had quite a multinational cast. I mean, a lot of
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. Because, you know, you've got Carthage. You've got all these sort of, and a lot of the actors were actually Maori, and I could tell they were Maori, but I think your average sort of American person will say, okay, they're Carthagian, however you say it.
It would be one thing, like, I could sort of see, like, if it was a few centuries, like, did they set this, like the 18, no, sorry, like the 800s, like the 9th
sort of post-Roman Britain.
Yeah, okay, so that even makes less sense. Like, you could sort of say, you could, if they had said it, you know, for whatever stupid reason in the 15th century or something, you could sort of blow it off. Oh, he's a Moor and somehow he got.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But, you know, if it's in the 9th century, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I will, I'm not too optimistic, but I'll give it a few more episodes. It might pick up. I
have the first four episodes in my collection. I have to get around to watch. I haven't got around to watching because I heard sort of iffy stuff about it. So I wasn't like, oh, I got to go see this right away.
Yeah.
It's like a lot. It's in my massive to watch pile, which isn't getting any shorter. For some reason, I've been watching the Larry Sanders Show for some reason. I've been sucked into that.
When I was 15, I enjoyed that. Everyone made fun of me for enjoying that, but I enjoyed that.
Enjoying what? Larry Sanders?
Yeah, the Larry Sanders Show.
That's why they make fun of you. That show is fucking awesome.
Well, it's, I mean, like, think about it. I was like 15 years old, and everyone else was, you know, I don't know, dumbass teenagers, I suppose. And I just happened to be.
The Larry Sanders Show is so good. They recently re-released the whole thing on DVD, all six seasons.
I watch
Conan, you know, and you know, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon and all those shows. So it's like the whole thing is a playoff.
That's right. And
so big thumbs up to that. That's just so good. You know, a lot of people call it like one of the greatest comedies of all time. So I love it. And I've also been watching on Sunday night. It's a rich tablet. Like, you can, like, there's Game of Thrones, obviously. There's this AMC show called The Killing, which is amazing. It's a remake of a Norwegian, I think, show that was a big hit in Europe. It's set in Seattle, filmed in Vancouver, of course, like everything else. Why they just can't call it Vancouver, I don't know. But it's filmed in Vancouver, set in Seattle.
I don't want to watch a movie about no Canadians.
I know. It's like, every time I watch it, I'm like, okay, that's a downtown. Oh, that's down in Vancouver. That's Burrard Bridge. You know, it's like in my head, I'm like, oh, this is Vancouver.
Well, that reminds me of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, which was filmed in Sydney. Okay. And The Matrix was filmed in Sydney, but The Matrix kind of didn't make it obvious. Whereas, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie made it blatantly obvious. They had all the landmarks, the famous Sydney Tower, but that's that's Washington City Observatory.
I don't know what's sadder. You watched the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie?
Yeah, I did, but I was like, just because I think it was one of those. Well, it was one of those things where I think it was back in the days of video rental, it was one of those ones where if you rent, an overnight movie, you can get the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie for free for rental also. So I just sort of watched it that way.
Got bullshit on that, but okay. It's like, it reminds me of, ever see that Jackie Chan movie? His first big hit was like Rumble in the Bronx. A Western big hit,
Yeah,
Rumble in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Well, that was filmed in Vancouver, but they set it in New York, right? Bronx.
Yep.
But there's this scene at the end of the movie where, he runs out onto this golf course, but there are these gigantic mountains in the background. It's the Rockies. and you're like, okay, where in New York is this filmed? there's this huge, humongous mountain and like right in the fore, right in the background. It was clearly not the Bronx, But and anyways, so. I was saying, so the killing is freaking amazing. Basically, it's they take one murder, and they spend the whole season solving it. So, and it's done very well. Again, it's a remake of this hit Norwegian show. Big thumbs up.
Yeah.
Also,
it would have been hard to adapt the script because all it would have said was Borka Borka murder Borka Borka Dorka Borka.
That's
right. Murder Borka Dorka.
Isn't that the Swedish Chef?
Yes, the Swedish Chef. Yes.
Doesn't one of our listeners talk like that? I can't remember.
Well, we have Mr. Borky Bork is the
Borky Bork. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. But that's all the Swedish language is. It's just very, different pitches and tones of the word Bork.
It's like we played Magicka. All these guys are like Horky Borky, Horky Forky, and Dane's like, boy, I didn't know this was in Swedish.
Well, okay, in my defense.
I want to put this in English, and they're like, hooka booka, awesome hooka book.
Hooka book, kick your ass, Borka. Yeah, in my defense, that was the first, that was in the introduction that I said that, and I very quickly picked on that it was.
You did not.
I did. Oh, yeah. But, at the same time, I feel bad enough for sort of not realizing. Straight away, it took me a few minutes, but at the same time, in the forums, people who have finished the game said, I'd like an English version. How do I change it from Swedish to English? And why is it like Swedish? And some people literally played the whole game and didn't realize that it was in its own sort of silly language. So that was rather sad, to say the least. It's good that
Americans.
Yeah. Well, it's good that show you mentioned spends a whole whole season on a murder because actually one of my sister's friends is a real CSI officer. And she said that show has just fucked up her work so much. And court cases are a mess these days because, the CSI show, type in the IP address. Oh, we've got his DNA through his IP. Wow. Yeah. It's full of, they just take such, leaps with the technology and, stuff like DNA testing, fingerprints, fingernail scrapings. Some of those things take months or at least at the very least, several weeks for the tests to come.
They take months. Yeah.
And it's a very slow, methodical process. And people in the court are like, why didn't you determine his racial background through his hair and stuff like that?
I remember reading about a course case where it was like a robbery or something.
Yeah.
It was like sort of a minor crime, and they had a witness. So they're like, okay, we got this guy banged to rights, but the case was dismissed because the jury was like, well, why didn't you get the DNA, his DNA from this item he stole, you know? why not? Well, we had a witness. It's a robbery. It's not a murder investigation, you know. So, but anyway, he got acquitted because people are idiots, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
It's called the CSI.
Do you want to talk about my jury duty on this podcast?
Oh yeah, I heard about that. What came of that?
Well, it's pretty interesting because it was a jury duty, and it was actually an inquiry into the death of somebody, and she had a sort of a Mandarin looking name, so I assume it was sort of a Taiwanese or a mainlander who had died in custody. I had the day off. Last time I had a jury duty notice, you could actually check online if you needed to go, and I checked online the day before and it said I didn't need to go, and then I just took the day off, which was really cool. But this time I actually had to physically go.
Did you go in your Dragon Ball shirt?
No, I didn't go in my Dragon Ball shirt. With my orange jumpsuit. No.
That's right.
No, I was more or less properly dressed. So, yeah, I line up, go to the courtroom, sit down, and, for some basic conversation, my Cantonese is okay, but sure as hell not okay for a court case. So, anyway, it turns out one woman is a new immigrant from the mainland, and then there's me. So the translator, I had to simultaneously translate English and Mandarin at the same time. I felt so sorry for the guy.
Oh, no.
Because, simultaneous translation is difficult enough, but he had to do it in Mandarin and English at the same time. But luckily, anyway, they do a little ballot and...
So you weren't selected for that.
I wasn't selected finally, so I could go home pretty quick. So.
Well, you're.
Something because like a lot of court cases are actually conducted in English, because some of the British, like I think the chief judge is still British, from the old days. So there's quite a few sort of British judges, and English is still an official language. So. Often it might be in English, but in this case, it was a relatively sort of, it wasn't a matter. It was a relatively, I suppose you could say, local matter. So it was in English, in Cantonese. So, yeah. And incidentally, speaking of Cantonese and Hong Kong related things, my long delayed Hong Kong cinema podcast is actually going to premiere within the next few days.
Is it really? Has it already been recorded, or is this more damn bullshit?
No, it's actually already been recorded. I'm just editing it now. And the first episode is going to be a solo one, because it's more of a sort of an introduction episode. And usually I intend on having, different sort of guest stars and co-hosts for each episode. And the first one, I am actually going to talk about the new 3D Sex and Zen film. And although my Hong Kong cinema podcast is actually going to be focused on older releases, the golden age of Hong Kong cinema, I chose a brand new title because it actually sort of harkens back to the day of old school Hong Kong cinema, and it's a good segue.
Well, that reminds me, did you end up going to see that? So did you have to see that 3D porn movie? Conan O'Brien did a joke about that.
I heard he did. Didn't actually see it, but I did see the film, and it's not real porn. I mean, there's no penetration.
And you went with your co-workers to see this, and gay sexual harassment suit will occur.
Well, I think it's you that's viewing this from Judeo-Christian perspective. You seem so shocked that my friend...
Who goes to a porn movie with a bunch of dudes into a...
It's not a porn film, for starters. It is not a porn film. It is not...
It's a porn film.
There is no penetration.
That doesn't mean anything.
Well, you got to understand, it's basically a comedy with heavy erotic undertones, or it's sort of a sex comedy, really, and it, you know,
it's like Colin. Okay, is like La Blue Girl
No, because you, I'm sorry, but the main content of La Blue Girl is still, you know, to get you off, and that is not the point of this film. It is not porn by any definition, and I think it's unfair for you to call it porn until you've actually seen it. I mean, a porn is something you can, flick on for 10 minutes, do your business, or 2 minutes, do your business, and then turn it off. This is, you know, a film, and it's a very funny, entertaining film as well. I mean, it's, it really is, and I don't want to give too much away for my review, but you know, at the same time, you know, sex is a normal thing. It's an entertaining film, and there were lots and lots of girls in the cinema too, lots of couples, and it's just not a big deal to do that. Whereas, you know, I'm sure in sort of places, you know, with heavy Judeo-Christian population, there'd be a great big shame about attending it. Stay tuned for my Hong Kong cinema podcast, which will come out.
Are you going to be pulling an Annie pack where you release one episode and then it's like 6 months later and then another one comes out?
Because, I mean, it'll be different co-hosts all the time. So I don't have to rely on, you know, one person to be present.
Well, all right. But like Lathers Blather, he puts out an episode like once a year or something.
The Haley Comet of podcasts, I think.
That's right.
It's a sight to behold, but it only comes once every 86 years or whatever. I anticipate at least monthly episodes. And, you know, I think, you know, that's quite normal for a lot of podcasts, I think. And
I know, but I think you're never going to achieve it.
I don't see any problem with achieving it.
All right, we'll see.
And I just want to say... you know, we might exaggerate, but one thing both you and I, make a point of not doing, in a world full of shit talking, we do not shit talk. There are so many sort of people that say, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and they just don't deliver at all. Or they release two episodes of a podcast and they disappear.
Whereas, I forget that whole Annie Pack fiasco.
Yeah, well, Annie Pack was kind of different because it was more or less anime specific, and we just didn't. We knew that we didn't focus on anime. But
you were like, oh, I'm gonna have this. I remember you had all these grandiose.
It was more because
maybe you didn't say it on air, but you're like,
well, of course I didn't. Of course I didn't say it on air because, like I said, I am not a shit talker. I will say what I am planning or what I am thinking, not necessarily that that's going to happen. But if I say on air that something will happen, it'll happen. I said Anime
Pacific
would last at least a year and be a weekly podcast. And for the first year, it was a weekly podcast, and it did last for more than a year. And then, we sort of said after we came back, okay, it's not going to be a weekly show. It might be weekly sometimes, but it's not always going to be weekly.
All right. People don't care about this.
Yes. So look forward to my upcoming Hong Kong cinema podcast. Now, back onto anime. Have you actually seen anything?
No.
No,
I'm sucked into Wheel of Time. I can't escape the vortex.
That's okay, because I have finished watching the 50-episode TV series, Future Police Urashimon. So I am going to review that. Now or after the break.
I'm going to do something a little bit irregular this episode because, as you know, I was preparing a promo at some stage, and then Alex very kindly went through all the Anime Pacific episodes and cut out some, you know, little snippets of good stuff to make a promo out of, and I never ended up finishing the promo. Although I was listening to it again, I thought it sounded pretty good, and I added some music to the background. So finally, here is the long in production promo that I was making.
Doctor, I'm seeing an alarming rise in premature innuendo.
Damn it, nurse, add some intelligence stat.
It's no good, Doctor, it's getting too boring and off topic.
Damn it, temper it with some adolescent humor.
Now it's too stupid, Doctor.
No! No!
Anime Pacific. Believe me, folks, we tried. AnimePacific.blogspot.com.
Police Urashimon. This has actually been reviewed before on Anime World Order by Gerald, and usually I sort of make a point not to review something that someone else has reviewed for several reasons, but I think I'll make an exception this time because when he had reviewed it, the show had not been fully fan-subbed. But since then, Anime Classic, with help from Gerald also, of Anime World Order, managed to get the show fully subtitled and released out there, because Anime Classic is now with us no more, but Exidore, it's actually Exidore, but I just like saying it in an Italian way, Exidore, stated that this was, you know, one of his favorite shows that he worked on. And it's one of those shows that, again, it's really, really, really popular pretty much everywhere in the world except, you know, in English-speaking countries. It was one of the biggest hits of Europe, anime-wise, back in the early 80s, and in Hong Kong. I asked my friend, the reliable Taminator, I said, hey, have you seen this show about this guy that goes back in time, goes forward in time, and he instantly knew what it was. And this is 1983 when it came out. And he said, well, it must have been good because he could still remember it. And he's seen a lot of stuff.
So
very 1980s look at the future. With you know, being early 80s, I can still see a little bit of a 70s influence there. But it, you know, one of the things I loved in this was this disco. And a disco is very much a 70s and 80s sort of phenomenon. But this disco, it's sort of, there's no gravity, so people are sort of flying and dancing in the air, and that was really cool. But
what about the key thing whenever these features is the computers? Like, you watch Gatchaman, like, it's like the advanced
floppy
computers.
Discs.
Yeah, or they have the advanced computers. They're like, he's like, you know, the old fashioned sort of big massive servers, or they have the massive tape spools kind of whirling around. Oh, the futuristic computer, or the shows from the 80s. You're right. It's like floppy disks, or
They just call them digital discs instead of floppy
disks.
Or it's a fusion of 3.5-inch disc, floppy disk, and cassette tape or something. Yeah, it's very much like that. I mean, there's certainly an appeal in that right there. But this show was, again, it was really popular around the world, and it was actually going to be adapted in English by, I think it was Saban Entertainment, as Rock and Roll Cop, which it was also called in German. And, of course, it was shown in France.
Rock and Roll Cop. What a terrible name.
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, but you have to remember in the 1980s, to make anything appear cool, you just had to put the words rock and roll before. Okay? You're going to have a pap smear. Oh, no! A rock and roll pap smear. Awesome! Snip, snip, snip. So, I mean, you know, for some reason, I still remember in the 80s thinking anything with the words rock and roll before them was just very cool. Or as we used to say in 1988, gas. Oh, that's gas.
You used to say that? I don't remember that.
well, maybe it was just in my primary school. I don't know. But everything was gas for a few months. But it's a terrible expression when you think about it. That's gas.
For a few months, we used to say that's poos, which is like... Pouce means like thumb in French.
So for some reason, Filipino gigolo. Hey,
Pouce
man is here.
At my primary school for a moment, we all started saying Pouce. Oh, that's real Pouce. I don't know. Anyways.
I don't know which is worse, gas or Pouce. Yeah.
Anyways, continue.
Yes. So Future Police Urashimon is an interesting one. The character designs are really quite different. They're certainly against the normal grain. And, you know, I asked Regan a while ago if he'd seen it. And he said he's got the series and he'd seen the first episode, but the character designs were a little bit, you know, a little bit sort of not really traditional, I suppose you could say. And it was the character design was done by a fellow called Takashi Nakamura, who's sort of worked on all sorts of stuff. He was actually the director of and character designer again of the Nightmare segment of Robot Carnival, which you know, Robot Carnival is you know, the poster child of the excellent Japanese animation and attention to detail and sci-fi and all the things that sort of, you know, made what I loved about the 80s. But he also did sort of key animation on Dagger of Kamui and done all sorts of stuff. But it's certainly not traditional character designs. Now, what was another popular show that I really loved in the 80s? Oh, it was Inspector Gadget. Were you into Inspector Gadget?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I loved Inspector Gadget. And the reason I bring that up is because I get somewhat of an Inspector Gadget vibe. And I was going to say that this was going to be, there was going to be an English adaptation of this, but Saban sort of dropped out at the last minute. And you can see why. I mean, it is pretty adaptation friendly because it's relatively episodic. It's not very violent. In fact, for the first half of the show, no one seems to get killed at all. And it's sort of very Inspector Gadget-y in some ways, in that it's, you know, it's a comedy. Basically, every single episode of Inspector Gadget, he's, you know, involved somewhat in, you know, everything mad is involved in everything in every episode, even if it doesn't look like it at the beginning. It turns out that, of course, mad are involved in some way. So, and it's very much the same in this, because basically every single episode, it involves the international or global crime organization, NeCrime, which I suppose means new crime. Basically it's each episode is a variation of some diabolical plot by NeCrime. And it doesn't really get sort of consistent until towards the last half of the series. And it also gets a bit more serious. But again, it involves a boy called, we don't know his name. Rio is what they call him, but he came from the past. Suddenly he's driving his buggy, bang, he's in the future. Doesn't know how he got there, and he doesn't even remember his name. But it turns out that the police could detect a time slip, and that anyone that time slips, I suppose, in going through, I mean, you know, any excuse really, but someone who time slips somehow develops superpowers. And that's sort of one ongoing thing that we're waiting for Rio to discover his superpowers. But Rio sort of runs afoul of this cop called Claude. And this is in Neo Tokyo, by the way. Neo Tokyo seems to be very cosmopolitan and international, because it seems most of the characters aren't Japanese. Like Claude is this sort of blonde, I don't know, Frenchman. He chases Rio into this church, but it's some new sort of religion of the future. And then this nun sort of gets involved. And then it turns out that the police want to recruit Rio, you know, being a time slipper, he's supposed to have some special power, and Claude to be partners, and the nun. And the nun is this really hot chick called Sophia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about her, but I think she's one of the hottest anime chicks ever. but one thing, she's a nun, and then suddenly she's a cop. And okay, it's all very silly, but this is a comedy. But it was actually going to be Wikipedia is correct in here. Rock and Roll is the German name, but it was actually going to be called Rockin' Cops in the United States.
That's still terrible.
Yeah, I know it is terrible. And then basically, they start this new police force called the Mobile Police, which is this giant sort of huge buggy. And the Mobile Police consists of Hiroshima, Claude, and Sophia, and Inspector Gondo, and Rio's cat, who time warped with him, called Mia. And it basically involves their, their missions to thwart Necrime each and every episode. And Necrime is headed by this fellow, Adolf von Ludovic. Actually, I should say he is the second in command for most of the series. And the head is this fellow called the Führer. And I think, it's sort of episodic. We don't know who the Führer is. But as the series progresses, we sort of learn more about Ludovic and the Führer. And eventually, of course, how Rio came from the past and who the Führer actually is. And the answer is actually sort of quite fascinating. Ludovic gets quite a bit of development. In fact, he probably ends up being the most developed character in the whole series. And honestly speaking, I mean, the characters are, you grow to love the characters and the characters sort of grow to love each other. But, they're not necessarily the deepest characters. All the depth is sort of more focused on Ludovic. So, and I think that's really, that's all you can really say about the series, that it's just, it's basically a Japanese Inspector Gadget. It's progressively, it gets progressively, it has a more sort of one sort of continuing storyline towards the end. But, it's more or less, what is Necrime going to do this episode? How do they thwart them? And when you accept that it's not a hard-boiled cop show with, people dying left, right, and center, and embrace it for sort of a fun episodic comedy, it's really quite enjoyable. I mean, case in point, I watched all 50 episodes. And this is a time where, watching a 26-episode series is, quite a chore for me.
Right.
Time-wise. But I ended up watching, all 50 episodes of this. And I sort of had that empty feeling in my heart when the show ended that I was going to miss these characters.
I know what you mean. Yeah. That's a rare... that happens to me rarely these days. But, that's definitely a sign of a good show. And you're like, oh, boy, I wish I could spend some more time with these characters.
Yeah. The last episode, it's really good in that it's conclusive. It's very conclusive. It's not one of those sort of Rumiko Takahashi-esque endings where, it doesn't finish at all. In fact, it almost restarts the show. Oh, here we go again, and then it ends the show. It's not like that. There was one very conclusive element to it, and they kind of reversed that at the very end, which I think the show would have been better without that reversal. But it's still a relatively conclusive ending. It would just ended up being a very enjoyable and funny show. And I think the characters really helped that. Again, they're not the deepest of characters, but, Ryu and Claude's sort of relationship, it sort of turns out, can't stand each other, grow to become sort of best friends and whatnot. But it's done in a very natural and funny way. And the character Sophia, again, I said, she's a sexy character. But she's not, she's not treated like an object. We never get to see her naked, or we never get to see her boobies or anything, unfortunately. Naturally, both the guys are always wanting to try and see her naked. And there was one episode where they go to this this planet, and she's sort of wearing this Jane-esque fur suit or leopard skin bikini, which was very sexy. But apart from that. Yeah. We don't get to see much flesh. And it was just a good, enjoyable show. I mean, this is a relatively quick review because I think...
Really?
Well, I think so... Anime World Order's review was like an hour on this. And I just think that it's a good, enjoyable show. The animation Gerald really praised the animation in this show, and there are sort of select episodes. One of my favorite episodes actually had the best animation. It was an episode involving the Shinkansen. And it was really good because, you know, it was sort of the 1980s model of the Shinkansen, and it was finally being put out of commission. But Nakrime, I think it's kind of like that movie Speed. They put a bomb on it and all sorts of shit happens. And it's sort of it was a good, well-animated episode. And it's no surprise because a lot of the animation was... a lot of the animators went on to work on stuff like Akira. So, and again, as I said, it's a very light show. Almost no one gets killed until the second half of the show. When it does kind of get, I wouldn't say dark, but at least in comparison to the first half of the show, it does get a little bit dark. And some people actually do die. So I suppose Saban Entertainment saw the first 26 episodes and said, oh, this is going to be no problem to adapt, you know, for English-speaking audiences.
Right.
And then they saw some of the second half and then kind of said, oh, you know, maybe we shouldn't. But regardless, it was a big hit around the world, probably more so than it was in Japan, again, which is a recurring theme in shows that I review. But all in all, it's a good, enjoyable watch. And it's not something you have to necessarily power watch through. You know, it's something you can just sort of watch whenever you've got 20 minutes free, and it's always enjoyable. And it's probably something that's good to watch with the kids. So, Future Police of Rashomon. And as soon as I finished watching that, I actually started watching Zillion.
And really?
I do have to say, you were actually quite right about the first episode. You were actually quite right.
Oh, all right. I'll have to isolate that clip and stick it into every show.
Oh, just as a constant reminder, yes.
Yes, that's right. Plus, well, I can say stuff like, remember when you, you know, say something really, you know. Never mind. Sorry, this is stupid. Continue. Yes,
well, I mean, I
was right.
Yes, well, you were right, and I did say that I did see the last few episodes only, which were genuinely good. But I will say that I'm going to review Zillion in the future, and I've actually got quite a lot of I've done quite a bit of research on this one, and
right.
It's actually interesting reasons why the first episode was, well, the problems inherent in the first episode. There are sort of some valid reasons why that was thus, and why the show actually improves later on, but I'll leave that to the review.
Yeah, so that's anyway. So yeah, Zillion. So that's the show that Regan subbed. We talked about that a few weeks ago, and
Also anime classic for the first
right
26 or so episodes.
So credit to anime classic and Regan. All right, moving along.
Fidel Castro resigned. Brilliant man. Gonna miss him. Sorry, that just came out of nowhere.
If you want to email us, we always look forward to emails. Email us at animepacific@gmail.com and post in our comments section. Always looking for new commenters to post, and we're not just shouting out a window.
It seems every time we say, oh, you know what, maybe we should wrap the podcast up, then we always get new commenters. So maybe we should, this is going to be the last episode of, no, I'm not going to say
that. Don't say that, because even people, like, I remember this, the one guy was like, you titled episode 97,
end of season,
and he was like, oh, I thought that was the end of the show, and I didn't want to listen to it, because it was like, and he stopped downloading the show, because he thought that was the last episode. So even, like, when you don't intend to, you sort of, I don't know, confuse people, so.
Yes.
Anyways, let's not drag this out. So, yeah, anyway, email us, comment at our website, amazonwidget@gmail.com, and we'll say goodbye until next time.
Yep. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
a short dose. Power, 電子の迷路。